You're listening to New Hampshire Now with Chris Ryan, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council.
This is New Hampshire Now, 914-50 and nhtalkradio.com. I am Chris Ryan. Appreciate you joining us for the program. This hour of New Hampshire Now is brought to you by ARP New Hampshire, as well as the Concord Food Co-op. And this segment of the show is brought to you by the Barley House. The road to the White House begins at the Barley House, home of America's best burger, and the WKXL's Pints and Politics series, which is presented by New England College. Joining us right now for a focus on the New Hampshire economy, individual that I saw at the Barley House when we were there with Amy Klobuchar. He is Taylor Caswell, New Hampshire's Business and Economic Affairs Commissioner. Taylor, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Chris.
Good. Appreciate you joining us for the show. Want to talk a little about transportation and the Granite State today, as this is a state that is overly reliant on automobile transportation. And I'm curious as to how you feel about that and how it could potentially be changed from an economic development perspective. I mean, there's always been a discussion about rail, the impacts potentially of that taking place, but that's still a long time out. And there's current difficulty, obviously. If you don't have a car, it is very difficult to get to work. And it presents a number of impediments in regards to the workforce. So when you look at transportation in New Hampshire, you know, what do you see? And are there alternatives or options? Or is this pretty much the way things are going to be?
Well, I mean, there's always going to be options. I think transportation is one of these industries that are going to be subject to a revolution in technology probably over the coming years. I can't really say exactly what it is. You can see tidbits of it coming. You can see autonomous vehicles. You can see the story that there were some stories the other day about flying cars being developed.
Yes, David Brooks was here yesterday and was talking about that.
Yeah.
But that's going to be a big challenge because of the cost. It's going to be $400,000 for a flying vehicle.
Right.
And then maybe it goes down more, but he didn't think it was going to drop more.
Well, when cell phones first came out, they were like $10,000.
That's true.
So, you know, I think technology
demand will...
Well, it's demand, and it's this thing called Moore's Law.
Right.
You know, I think anytime you start to involve technology, what you see is a rapid progression of reduction in cost, reduction in price, reduction in efficiency, battery efficiency, energy use, all that sort of thing makes things faster and more usable. In two-year increments was
right.
The theory, and I think they've actually shown that it's less than 2 years.
I think that's a good point in that the current technology for the current vehicles are such, but as demand increases and new companies get involved with these products, the potential exists for costs to go down because of the cost of the product itself, and there may be different aspects of the current this current flying car, which costs a certain amount but can be produced for less by another company once there becomes an interest in it.
Yeah, and I think, look, I mean, I don't mean to be down on any specific type of transportation, mode of transportation, but with all of this coming, you know, I've driven one of these cars that has the cruise control that keeps you a certain distance from the car in front of you and maintains that speed. And I was interested in that technology. So I watched this video on YouTube where they had out in the desert, they had 50 cars, say, in this huge circle. And they just had them driving around in a circle. These were all cars that had autonomous capability, but they had them driving just by themselves, right? And after a few minutes, somebody taps their brakes. And you can see this like effect of on everybody else. They slow down. It comes to a virtual stop at one point, but then they get going again. Now they do the same thing, but they turn on the autonomous function. The thing is just like a perfect circle all the way around. Nobody touches. Nobody does any of those sort of things. And it's a consistent speed. There's another interesting thing I read about, which is, you know, when you're in the city and you're going up the escalator from the subway and the right-hand side is for the standers and the left-hand side is for the people that are
moving. Are you a stander or a mover?
I'm a mover.
Yeah.
I'm always on the left. But the point, it was an interesting study that somebody did.
If I'm in a hurry, I'll be a mover.
Right. Well, but here's the point is that if everybody stood in both rows on each step, two people on each step all the way up the escalator, that moves more people by a large factor than the standers and the walkers.
Interesting.
Because the walkers are taking up two or three stairs per step.
Right, right.
Right. So they think they're going faster, but if everyone just stood there, they go. So there's this really deep issue around the movement of people. And if you start thinking about where you're going to invest resources to help people get to work, for instance, on a highway or on a train, and you're willing to invest a significant amount of money. And, you know, as you know, the state has shown that there's a lot of, you know, we need to continue to spend money on infrastructure. We're doing this study on rail. We're doing this. But there's so many pieces moving here that it's difficult to say definitively that we need this, or this. Mm. Because everything's changing. Everybody talks about millennials. They want to be downtown in certain areas. They want to walk to everything or ride their bike. Yeah, I think that's true for a lot of them. I wouldn't say that's universally true across every millennial in New Hampshire. But here we have all these great downtowns with all this capability for people to live and work in the downtowns. Maybe it's a question of how we design our employer and residential mix. There's all sorts of other components that impact this transportation question that it quickly becomes very complex. And leaping to decisions on one or the other is going to be wrong, in my view, over time.
I think that's a good point in that, you know, there's this constant battle, if you will, between meeting people where they are and trying to develop, whether it's products or policy or methods to get them engaged and say, well, this is what we need to do. We need to meet people where they are. But people are constantly changing where they are. Mm-hmm. And it makes more sense to look at things from a strategic long-range perspective and do things based upon what has worked in the past and what you think is going to, you know, to work moving forward. And I think that you know, technology and transportation are in that area where you may look at it and say, well, folks today are just not going to want to they're just not going to want to have self-driving cars. They want to drive their own car. But and you may see polls on it, and there's the problems that could take place. But when it's presented to them and they see what the product is like, their attitudes may change. If you had asked and were trying to predict, you know, the use of cell phones and the internet years ago, it just wouldn't have. People would have said no. There's no way that people are not going to sit and talk with one another, and they're just going to scroll through their phone for information at a dinner.
That's a great example. I remember. When I first
it was Paul Krugman who said that the I don't know if he said the internet or the cell phone was going to be the fax machine of the future.
Yeah. It was the cell phone.
The cell phone.
But yeah, I can remember showing my age here. But when the cell phones first started featuring cameras, and my employer offered, you know, said, here's the phone we're giving you, and it has a camera. I'm like, what the heck do I need a camera on my phone
And the pictures
for?
Were horrible.
I'm like, this is the most ridiculous.
The flip phone picture, like you take a picture, and it would just like, particularly if it was like motion, and the thing would like stop, and it would be blurry, and you're like, this is never going to work. But you have to think about, well, what's possible beyond what is right here, right now? And
but
it's
none of us saw that.
Nobody saw it.
A couple of people saw it. I certainly didn't see it. And now it's so ubiquitous.
So with transportation as an example, I could go through like 10 different reasons why self-driving cars are not going to work in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to take into account the ability to react to the different problems and how technology may find ways. As you referenced, as you were talking, out in Arizona, it's the desert. There's no snow. There's no fog. It's ideal conditions. Mm-hmm. So what happens to the sensors when they're in the snow? And the current sensors in vehicles have some problems with them in weather. And so then you say, well, that's why it's not going to work. As opposed to saying, well, they're probably going to develop ways to enhance the technology so that that is no longer a problem. Or if we're connected to the grid, and you know, there's a problem with connection, and therefore it's not going to work. So the reason that we don't have self-driving cars now is because the technology is not ready, or we would have them. But the challenge that's going to exist is that when the first self-driving truck or car is out there, it needs to be perfect. Because the first time that one of those cars crashes, and the second time, and the third time, if there are first, second, and third times, that could be it for the product for yep. many years.
Yeah. Well, and I think, look, I mean, you got, just as you say, so example, I have a friend of mine who really likes sports cars, and he's got this old Porsche that he tools around then. And he absolutely will not accept the fact that a Tesla can beat one of his Porsches.
Right.
I mean, it's like, that's not a real car. And I'm right. like, no, here's video after video showing them right. completely crushing them. And it's like, they won't accept that type of technology. They're really not into that. So you're always going to have people that are going to want to have, again, their own car, their own vehicle, all the freedom. I mean, the highways and the cars and the American liberty and freedom, those things like go together like apple pie and baseball, right? So are we heading toward a point where there's actually separate infrastructure for autonomous vehicles? You know, where you say, if you're going to drive your autonomous thing, because it's not just the cars. I mean, it's the way the lines are painted. It's the way the direction and the ability to handle yeah. different types of weather and maintenance and all these other things. So there's just so many unanswered questions as we leap forward in so many ways, particularly and especially in transportation, that it's really a difficult issue to really get your handle on and feel like you're moving in the exact right direction.
Right. So let's take rail as an example. I like rail travel. Mm-hmm. And it was just down in D.C. and in Baltimore, and it was great. Amtrak, 30 minutes from Baltimore to D.C. It was great. And but you have to look to the future and say, well, building the infrastructure to be appropriate for rail is going to cost a ton of money. There are mm-hmm. stations, the infrastructure in the towns, rebuilding the rail lines itself. I mean, is there going to be, and does it make more sense to have, as you're talking about, a separate paving infrastructure? That can't be healthy for that guy's back. Oh, this guy's like walking around with a huge carpet on his back. He's like, he is literally about 45 degrees at this point walking with this carpet on his back. The things you see on Main Street. Anyway, so does it make more sense to look to the future and say, well, let's hold off on spending millions and millions and millions of dollars on rail because there may be a rail type of system that works without the actual rail. There's going to be, you know, just a pavement where there is a large-scale, self-driving yeah. railroad type of mechanism that can drive 150 miles an hour and goes on its own. Right. So do you look to the future and say, okay, let's see what companies are basically building rail but are doing such in this new innovative way where it's a bus-rail type of hybrid and build a infrastructure for that, maybe where the rail lines even are currently? Or do we go with a rail infrastructure in order to diversify the options that we have for transportation?
Yeah, I mean, it's questions like that that really kind of scare me because I do totally understand the value and what rail can bring to New Hampshire in terms of development around the stations and, you know, matching up people being able to live near where they can access the transportation to get yep. them to where they want to go.
Like you see in Maryland, you see basically small communities
yeah.
that are built up, condominiums that are built up around where the rail stations are.
But I think one of the reasons why that is so effective in urban areas is because they're urban areas.
Right.
And because you have so many people that you need to move around. Now, again, looking into the future, I don't know. Does southern New Hampshire or central southern New Hampshire start to look like a Maryland? I don't know.
Because you consider, as an example, you consider where Boston is and where Baltimore is, and it's basically the same distance from Salem, Windham, Nashua to Washington, D.C. and Baltimore.
Yeah.
Like, it's basically the same distance, and then there's the whole infrastructure in between from point A to point B.
Yeah. Well, I mean, see, when you have a limited pool of resources to invest in something that
right.
addresses the transportation issue in the state, and you sort of bear in mind all of the things that we've just been talking about here, throw in the fact that rail is a legitimate way to move people around right now in a lot of areas, but it's hugely expensive.
Yeah.
And to the point that you would probably be deferring any other sort of accommodation of any other type of transportation for an undefinable period of time in the future. It illustrates the challenge from a policymaking standpoint as to where you put the resource. I get the whole idea of rail. I certainly understand it. And I would love to be able to hop on a train in Concord and find myself in Boston in 45 minutes. But at the same time, we have enough trouble trying to get people to live and work in New Hampshire and maybe not think so much about always working necessarily in Massachusetts and look at the options. There's a legitimate question there in my mind as well. People move in both directions, yes. Maybe we'll continue to see that trend where we have a lot of people increasing that are working, that live in Massachusetts, that are working in New Hampshire. Maybe this incentivizes that. Maybe this allows that to happen on a more regular basis. So many unknown questions. I do look forward to the fact, though, that we are going to have this study on the commuter rail question in New Hampshire, and hopefully they can start to analyze some of these questions as part of that, not just be just the exclusive analysis of whether there's enough people to ride a train from Manchester to Boston, but to really take into account all these other components that are out there as it relates to technology and give us some real options. Because, you know, if it's just going to be A versus B and each one is $1 billion, that you're never going to get an answer.
That's Taylor Caswell, New Hampshire's Business and Economic Affairs Commissioner, joining us here on the Hampshire Now program. This hour of the show is brought to you by ARP New Hampshire, as well as the Concord Food Co-op, and this segment of the program presented by the Barley House. As we conclude on this topic, I think that there's also an important piece in regards to connecting individuals who are unable to secure their own transportation, purchase their own vehicle, and connect them to where the jobs are. And whether that's a public-private type of partnership, I think that there's certainly a that should be looked at, whether it's bus transportation. We look at the bus system here in Concord, and it is sporadic, and there's been a lot of discussion about over the many, many years about how to make that better. And to me, it's about connecting individuals and providing opportunity, you know, to them so that they can move outside of whatever their situation is. And you mentioned the cost of public transportation. And you'll see places like St. Louis and Baltimore, which basically provide free transportation for folks on the honor system, mm-hmm. so that they have opportunities to rise out of, you know, their neighborhood in West Baltimore and get a job as a manufacturer at the airport, and can do so in a way that does not cost them a lot. And so we have a lot of rural communities here in this state, and the jobs aren't necessarily there. So, you know, thinking about and providing a type of either public, private type transportation infrastructure that brings folks in and out of their communities and to jobs, that would seem like something that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, again, going to the sort of technology that's upon us right now, and on that front, rather than having, you know, some sort of a voucher program for someone to go free on a bus or on a train from point A to point B in an urban area, in some of these rural areas, you know, we've got things like Uber and Lyft.
Yeah.
We've got
but still, you know, that's developers. More expensive than like $2 per.
What I'm saying is that if you have a downtown, like let's just say Newport, for example, mm-hmm. you know, I think a lot of the ideas is develop downtown Newport as a residential center for people who are working maybe at Dartmouth or over at Ruger or up in Claremont or Lebanon somewhere. And maybe they want to get a better job, but they can't get themselves there. Instead of requiring developers to put in huge parking lots, why not do some sort of incentivization right. for Uber and Lyft drivers to move people between those things? You know, those are the sorts of questions and innovations that we need to be considering. I really just thought that up off the top of my head. It's not any kind of sort of serious initiative we're looking at, but it's this type of innovation and the use of technology that, you know, needs to be part of the equation.
Taylor, as always, appreciate joining us for the program.
Good to see you, Chris.
That is New Hampshire's Business and Economic Affairs Commissioner Taylor Caswell here on New Hampshire Now. 139-1450 and nhtalkradio.com. This hour of the program brought to you by ARP New Hampshire, as well as the Concord Food Co-op. And that segment of the show brought to you by the Barley House. We'll come back with more from inside the Concord Photo Service Main Street studio after this.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now with Chris Ryan, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council.